You're listening to Big Cast, your source for financial technology innovation with John Best.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Big Cast. My name's John Best, and I am the CEO of Best Innovation Group, also Big-DLT, which stands for Distributed Ledger Technologies. And we love to do cool things for credit unions, and today, I'm going to do a solo episode of the Big Cast here, so I don't have Glenn or anybody with me. I'm actually in a hotel room out here in LA. I just finished speaking to a great credit union, Financial Partners Credit Union, to their entire staff about digital transformation and data analytics. It was really cool to see an organization that's kind of pulling together on their culture. But with that in mind, I really kind of wanted to jump into a couple topics today. So I'm going to take time, sit back and relax, because I'm going to talk first about crypto and the fact that Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan, JPM Coin, we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then we're also going to talk about Brexit. Now, you may say in the fintech world, why are we going to talk about Brexit? But I've been doing some research on it lately, and I have some concerns for my listeners, particularly people who are running banks and fintechs, around what the collateral effects of this might be. So let's start off with JP Morgan. So JP Morgan Chase, the boss of this place is Jamie Dimon. 2 years ago, he said that cryptocurrency, particularly Bitcoin, was a fraud that global governments would crush. His main strategist even came out and said cryptocurrency was like a pyramid scheme. They cannot be reliably valued. They have a significant tail risk that could come in the form of a regulatory ban. This was actually Marco Kalanovich, one of JP Morgan's strategists. They basically really went after the idea that all of these cryptos were just extremely bad. Actually, one of the things he said that I thought was fantastic was the Bitcoin craze we've seen this year is worse than tulip bulbs, a reference to the tulip mania of the 1600s. I wasn't aware there was a tulip mania in the 1600s. And that if a JP Morgan trader had done anything with Bitcoin, he'd fire them in a second for two reasons. It's against our rules. And most importantly, he or she is stupid and both are dangerous. So a lot of people kind of said, well, that's great, but you don't understand Bitcoin. And if you understood it and if you understood the underlying technology of it, you would be more interested in it. But obviously he stood by that. And now here we are, fast forward 2 years later. And the headlines this week say JP Morgan is creating its own cryptocurrency. The nation's largest bank is launching its own cryptocurrency, dubbed the JPM coin. The cryptocurrency has a fixed value redeemable for $1. It won't trade freely like Bitcoin and many other cryptocurrencies. So let's stop there. So that's a key differentiator. So I think that one of Jamie's primary complaints about the Bitcoin platform, or particularly Bitcoin and other cryptos, was the fact that it was speculative, meaning that if you look at our original fiat currency, and maybe you've listened to some of my previous podcasts, particularly the one with David Doerr, which was a fantastic podcast about fiat currency and how it came about. But our original fiat currency here in the United States, that, still the strongest currency, the one that rules all, is the US dollar. And it was originally backed by gold. As a matter of fact, if you go out and you look and you search, you'll find that there are pages out there, original currency, that on the actual dollar, it did used to say that it was a gold certificate. And that was a long, long time ago. And suddenly we kind of walked away from that. And we decided that we were going to really kind of, go forward. And instead of it saying it was a gold or a silver certificate, which you could, actually, as I said, see, it would say $1 in silver payable to bearer on demand. So that's an example of silver. You could also find ones for gold. These are 1957 or back then. And so the idea was that for all the dollars we had, it was, backed by gold. And as I was a kid, I used to hear my mom and dad say something along the lines of, for all the gold in Fort Knox, or it's, stronger than Fort Knox. So another example is a $20 bill that used to say, and my grandfather used to collect these, so it was pretty fascinating to me. It would say, 20 in gold coin payable to the bearer on demand, which meant that in theory, you could take this certificate to a bank and get $20 worth of gold. which I guess at the time, I'm not sure what it would have been back then, because it would have been bullion of some sort that you would have had to get. But currently a troy ounce is worth somewhere between $1,200 to $1,250. So that mine, what Jamie has done, or what the piece has done here, is it says that the JP Morgan or the JPM coin has a fixed value redeemable for $1, which presumably means that it can be broken down precision wise into two decimal points, which would take it down to the penny. So up to 99 cents and then a dollar. In that way, it's no longer speculative. What they're saying is for every one of these coins, there's a dollar somewhere to back it. So that's a start in why it's different. Now, why would they do this? Well, they believe that they can lower clients' costs and risks. So rather than doing transfers where we have to go through real-time payments or ACH systems, we can change it to where they can transfer this money in this JPM coin. JP Morgan is an organization that moves trillions of dollars around the world every day on behalf of their customers. And by the way, this is tedious. It's tedious to do a wire transfer to another country. It's tedious for someone to do a wire transfer into the United States. Now, one of the reasons it's tedious is because of regulatory issues. All of that inbound and outbound money needs to be monitored. Now, I don't see a lot of rhetoric on the internet around how JP Morgan is planning on working with the regulators, in the sense of if they're going to use this virtual currency basically to transfer money between one place and another, you have to think that there are a lot of regulatory pieces that need to be dealt with. For example, one of the reasons that regulators did not like Bitcoin is because it's essentially an anonymous platform, meaning that once you put money into it and you send the money back and forth, there's no way to track it back to the person, which made it a very enticing platform for bad guys to use, definitely for nefarious reasons. If you were going to hire a hitman, pay him in Bitcoin so it can't be tracked back to you. Now, that has changed. It's not as hard to track Bitcoin, but at the same time, it certainly was an issue for a world that was dealing with terrorism and money laundering at the levels that we've seen. So I don't see a lot on how they're going to handle this, but presumably I would think that they're going to follow the same rules, and that if you buy any of this JPM coin, that you're going to have to go through the same KYC, you know, AML and OFAC checks that anybody else would go through, and that this is not going to be any kind of anonymous coin. So with that in mind, what is the value if it is that you're still going to have to go through all the regulatory hops? Well, one of the pieces is that I believe, and I could be wrong, again, there's not a lot to support this, but I want to make sure that we think about it. Let's say that you are a customer of JP Morgan and you want to transfer 50 grand to another JP Morgan bank or a bank somewhere using that supports the JPM coin. Presumably, the JP Morgan would have some sort of deal with that remote institution where they could take the coin. But what would happen is the coin would actually move and instantaneously credit the account on the other side. I believe the account would be credited with whatever fiat it was in that world. So let's say it was Mexico. Well, then the account would be credited with Mexican fiat. Well, what is the value of a dollar to a Mexican peso at the time of that transfer? And the question I have is, are they making money or losing money? I'm going to tell you that, knowing JP Morgan, I would say they're probably making money. It's likely that, one, they'll charge a fee for that transfer. It'll be cheaper. But two, that on the FX or the financial exchange, there is an opportunity for them to hedge. We're talking about a $2 trillion bank. And so a $2 trillion bank can easily front the upfront money to fund a custodial account at the remote institution and move that money in, and then either hedge on the FX to make more or make less in between those transactions. So that is pretty impressive if that's what they're thinking. The other thing that Demon had said, that he always said he supported blockchain technology for tracking payments, but he would fire anyone, as I said before, that traded in Bitcoin in a second. He also said he regretted those comments, that he believes cryptocurrencies are real and had to be examined individually, meaning that, yeah, there are some of these that are, you know, there were lots of ICOs or initial coin offerings that were horrible and not real. But there were plenty that were something that was real and is still out there. I mean, Bitcoin is 10 years old, but it's never going to become mainstream until it's regulated. Well, I also think it's never going to become mainstream until it's no longer as speculative as it is. So I think this is a pretty big move by JP Morgan Chase. I also think that I wonder sometimes if his announcement in the past was basically smokescreen to say, yeah, this is horrible. Don't do anything. So other people would go, see, this guy said this. And so don't research it or go near it. Meanwhile, in the background, they're all over it. But I will tell you that based on what I understand and the work I've been doing in the DLT space, which has been extensive, that he can lower costs and risks. He can make money transfers instantaneous. They can reduce the amount of capital they need to hang on to or have on hand. I also believe that they can increase security, and that not only can they increase security, but they can increase or reduce the fraud. I guess to me, those are two different things. There's increasing security on behalf of the customer, but reducing the whole system's use for fraud. So just wanted to talk about that for a minute. And I think it would be interesting to see where this goes. You know, there's a great quote. This was CEO of a $47 billion bank, Signature, Joseph DiPaolo. He said, if you're not in the blockchain technology as a bank, you won't be around in 3 to 7 years. So I'm going to take the word blockchain out of there because it's very much a sort of a label for a type of technology. But it, you know, unfortunately, if you're a purist, you know that not all of these technologies use blocks. And the replacement for that term blockchain would be distributed ledger technology. I do believe they're right. I do believe that there's too many efficiencies around smart contracts, which are not even mentioned in this JPM coin piece, which is a big piece of this, that everyone's going to have to get involved in this. So who will they roll this out to? Well, they're going to start off with their major institutional customers, not individuals. So you can't go out and buy any JPM coin today, but they do expect to roll it out to a broader range of customers later this year. I think this will go faster rather than slower because, again, Bitcoin's been around for 10 years. So repurposing this technology shouldn't be that difficult. It isn't that difficult. So I'm going to close out the JPM coin discussion, and would love to hear from you, your thoughts around this. One question I have is, if you're listening to this and you're a bank or a credit union, would you sign up today? Would you call JP Morgan and say, yep, we're in. We want to accept JPM coin on behalf of our business customers, on behalf of our, international customers or whatever. What are your thoughts on this? Hit me at JB FinTech. Now let's switch and talk about Brexit for a bit. Why would I talk about Brexit? What does it matter to us here in the United States? Well, having lived in Europe for as long as I did, I got to understand sort of what the European sort of group was. When I lived in Europe, there were still German marks, there were still pounds, there were francs in Paris, and you know, we used to sort of travel from place to place, and you know, and you could quickly get to some of these places. You could take a train from Stuttgart to Paris, in 2 or 3 or 4 hours. And when you got there, you had to plan on trading out your money. And one day a group said, let's create something called the EU. And what the EU was a way for basically the United Kingdom, France, Germany, all these countries to allow people to go through their borders without customs, to be able to trade freely amongst each other. Now, if you understand that, then you would understand that the EU has been in place now for a long, long time, which is the predecessor of the European Economic Community, which is Belgium, France, Italy, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands and West Germany in 1957. But once they created it, it started to grow. And now they have literally 28 countries. And if you remember what it used to be like to go between these countries, you would have to stop, show your passport. If you wanted to go and take the Eurorail between the two, you would, have to go through a customs area. You'd have to fill out information. You'd have to, declare things. And so that was a lot of work. Well, now, to join this, you have which a democratic free market government, which means that if you live in England or the UK and you grow flowers and you want to take these flowers over to Paris because, you know, it's just a channel right away on a boat. You don't have to go through any customs. You don't have to do anything. You load up all your flowers and maybe you have distributorships over there. Maybe you have florists and whatnot and you deliver them. And so that's a big, big deal. It also means that there are goods and services in both countries that rely on the other countries to create. I'll try to use an example. If you're making some kind of cheese, but you need a certain kind of goat's milk that only comes from, you know, Wales, then you would need to have, be able to get that goat's milk. And how much you pay for it would dictate the cost of, per unit and your cost for selling it to the public. This is important. We need to understand that this ecosystem of all of these countries, you know, the member states of the European Union are closely tied together. You know, most of these places are pretty close. It's like a small United States. So what does that mean? Well, it means that all of a sudden these markets grew and people could use this one currency amongst all of them. They created what was called the euro. And the euro is something that can be spent in every one of these countries. So you don't have to change your money, which means very similar to what we just talked about, that, you know, the JPM coin is fixed to a dollar. Well, a euro was a fixed amount. So you didn't have to worry about financial exchange between, say, you know, pounds and francs if you were delivering these flowers to France and what that looked like. It reduced complexity. It created more markets. It created a freedom for people, particularly business owners, to sell their goods and services into other markets and do it in a very efficient way. Now, a couple of years ago, for whatever reason, which I'm, you know, politically I'm not going to get into, nor am I going to get into tampering and all the other things that go with it. All we need to know is this. The UK said, you know, we think this Brexit thing isn't a good deal, or they were concerned about it. They took it to their parliament. Their parliament, rather than debate it, come up with a plan, decided to put it to the people. In other words, let's put it out here as a vote. Do we leave or stay? What they didn't do was educate everybody on what leave or stay meant, because they were pretty sure that everybody was going to choose stay. However, that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, leave was the winning vote. With that in mind, now they had to leave, and it has to be done by March 29th, which as of today's, you know, I'm recording right now, it's February 18th. So less than 6 weeks away, March 29th. Now, there's two ways to leave. There is an orderly way to leave, which means that on March 29th, there's something in place that says we are going to slowly transition out of this, which means that the UK, which includes Wales, Northern Ireland, Scotland, you know, all these various countries in the UK, are going to have to start using their own currency again. They're going to have to start stopping everybody at all the borders so that they have to come through and get checked by customs. And remember, the United Kingdom is an island, and so it's not, you know, connected in any meaningful way. There is a channel to France, but you have to take a ferry to get over there. So they are literally an island. But the orderly exit is what's on the table right now in London. And Theresa May, their prime minister, continues to try to put together something that will appease both sides. So you have something similar here to America. You have very conservative people and other liberal people. And if she puts something together that, you know, somehow violates the conservatives' thoughts on this, then they will, you know, vote it down. And if she puts something together that sort of doesn't help the folks on the liberal side of it, they'll vote it down. And it's already been voted down several times. And it's a massive document that has been, you know, she's trying to basically put together a deal that makes everybody happy. One of the key elements of that is Northern Ireland, who those of you who are old enough to remember, for many, many years was in a terrible conflict with the rest of Ireland. If you remember the IRA bombings and those sorts of things, just horrible things happening. right now, today, they were able to sort of create this ceasefire. There's no checkpoints, and Ireland can just go over to Northern Ireland. As soon as this particular May 29th, if there's not a deal in place to do something about this, those checkpoints are all going to come back. And it's conventional wisdom that when those checkpoints come back, the folks in Ireland are going to be very upset because it's going to inhibit their business. It's going to change things. So if no deal's in place by March 29th, then what's going to happen is that all of a sudden in the United Kingdom to get in, you're going to have to be checked by customs. There are trucks, tons and tons of trucks every day that bring different things from Europe over to the United Kingdom that they need, including medications, food, various things. And if we start stopping them all, they're predicting it could take as much as 6 days for some of these things to get into the United Kingdom. Why? Because, again, when they voted to leave, no one was informed of what the collateral effects of leaving would be, nor was there a big plan for that. As a matter of fact, there was a quote from, here it is, EU head Donald Tusk says, there's a special place in hell for Brexiters, you know, for planning to leave, saying it was foolish to do so without a plan. And that's absolutely true. And the reason he's saying that is because now the UK has come back and said, hey, we need more time. And the EU is going, no, because it's already hurting both economies. Just since they started up talking about this Brexit, the UK economy has already lost 3% of its GDP. So now the other option is they get a deal in place, and that deal allows an orderly removal. But even if that deal's in place, it's likely that that still will impact the economy. As a matter of fact, in some cases, there are folks who are predicting it will impact them more. And then finally, there's a third option, which is unlikely, which is they vote not to do it. But because it was a referendum that was voted on, now it has to be voted on again. And it's not trivial to get something out to the entire, all the people of the United Kingdom to have them vote on something. As a matter of fact, they say it takes about 22 weeks and they only have six. Now, why do we care? Why am I talking about this on this podcast? Well, I believe that when this hits March 29th, and most experts believe this as well, there will be a hit on their economy. When I say there, I mean the EU, both sides, both UK and France and everybody in the EU. And we as Americans are very dependent upon that economy in a lot of ways. There are electronic services now that we get from France because we don't want to put them through China or Korea or those sorts of areas. And I guess what I'm saying is that I believe that the people who are listening to this podcast, which are mostly the banks I work with and the Canadians I work with, I don't know that we've done enough strategy to understand how this might impact our memberships, our business members. And I worry that while it won't have an immediate effect, it could have a much quicker effect than we think on our economy. And if that were to happen, what would we do to help support our businesses, our groups that are related to this? And why is it important for us to understand what could happen? Well, I think that the world is becoming far more global. We proved that with Bitcoin. In the top of this podcast, we talked about JP Morgan and what he's doing, you know, what they're doing with the JPM coin and the fact it's international. Everything has some dependency and some relationship to everything else. And the dynamics of that are very difficult to predict. There's a great science fiction book called The Three Body Problem. And what The Three Body Problem talks about, a physics problem where you've got initial positions in velocity of three big point masses, and you're trying to figure out their motion using, you know, Newton's laws, and you're trying to relate that back to, say, a single body. So you can think of it like three suns and an Earth. Now, today we have one sun and an Earth, and our Earth orbits that sun because of the gravitational pull. But if there were another sun nearby that occasionally pulled us out of the orbit of that sun and we started to orbit the other sun, that would be a problem. And if there were a third body adding to that dynamic, it's almost impossible to come up with, the actual mathematical derivations to let you know and predict what's going to happen, even with quantum mechanics and quantum computing. I believe that we are looking at an environment that is so complex in today's current global economic system that Brexit could have a trickle-down effect especially into the entrepreneurs in the United States who have reached out and are doing business in these countries and doing a good business and providing good service. And this is going to impact them. And then it's going to therefore impact us. So I'm going to encourage everybody to think about that a little bit. I would love to hear from you on it. Do I think it's going to be some sort of catastrophic thing? No. But I do think that if we don't keep an eye on it, we could suffer the consequences of ignoring something, basically ignoring a weak link in the chain somewhere that could have a dramatic impact on us. So I encourage you to go out, learn about it, maybe look into your business accounts, your accounts, definitely look into your international transfers, any of the kind of work that you're doing back and forth. What's it going to look like when they have to start taking pounds again? What does that FX mean to you? How do you work with a UK bank? What's an orderly change? No one knows right now. And so I think you got to be somewhat prepared. So that in mind, it's an interesting time to be alive. And we're continuing to see a lot of volatile change, a lot of things happen. Thank you for listening to me babble here for a little while. Normally I have someone else with me or someone to interview, but, and I'd love to hear your comments. If you think I'm crazy and I'm wrong, tell me why. I'm not one to generally be too reactionary on these things, but for some reason I'm sensing an issue. And I would love to know if other people have other ideas and solutions. So thanks again. And I hope to see you soon. If you're going to be at AXFI, if you're coming out in June, which is coming up shortly. I'm super excited to be speaking at AXFI. We've got a lot of great people who are going to be there. I'll be working with Brian Lay from AlphaRank. We'll be talking about quantum computing and AI and what that looks like in the fintech world and maybe even doing some hands-on quantum computing. So you definitely don't want to miss that. You can go to AXFIconference.com and sign up. And that's about it. If you want to find me, I'm at JB Fintech. And as I said, you can go to www.big-cu.com.
Got a question or want to join the conversation? We'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at Big Fintech, email us at info@big-fintech.com, or visit our show notes and comments at www.bigfintechmedia.com.